From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Lainey Welch will soon be hanging up her microphone as producer of Alaska Fish Radio. For those of us who care about Alaska's fish and fisheries, Alaska Fish Radio has been a touchstone and a reality check, and has been an inspiration to would-be fish reporters like myself. Lainey was kind enough to sit down with me this week and reflect.
This current Alaska Fish Radio I've been doing since 2003. So, gosh, almost 20 years. But I'd had several permutations before that. Mm-hmm. You know, I never stopped doing radio except for a very brief time. So I started out doing a 14-minute show like yours. And then quickly realized that I like short form. Mm-hmm. I like turning over fast information enough. You know, my radio is similar to my column. It's short segments with the, you know, contact information, issues. So if somebody wants to flesh it out into a full-blown feature, or like on public radio, if you have the luxury to, you know, give something 5 minutes, they can do that. And I always feel so satisfied when that's the case, where I'll see somebody pick up something that I threw out in a shorter form and, you know, put it into a big feature. Then I think, all right, I've really done my job.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Do you know how many fish radio programs you've produced over the years?
Well, you know, I did a little search. I thought, okay, I found out there's on average 260 weekdays in a year. And so that would add up to about 8,000.
Wow.
I know.
Wow.
Give or take a little, you know?
Each one you had to think, what am I going to make this show about?
That's why I like short form.
Well, can you think of some of your favorite shows off the top of your head?
I really love anything to do with commodities marketing. You know, I like programs that make people aware that in Alaska, they, you know, they're just one kind of small part of a big puzzle out there in terms of markets. Alaska thinks it's the biggest thing in the world, you know. Well,
and we are kind of up here by ourselves.
Right.
It's easy to think of Alaska as being standalone.
Right. Right.
But of course, we're tied right into those same protein markets that the whole world has to compete in.
Seafood, I think, is the number one commodity traded item in the world.
Wow.
Yeah. And Alaska, maybe say for salmon, maybe on the global level, it's maybe 13% of that market.
Right. And I know that for years and years and years, there has been a very steady ratio when it comes to Alaska seafood, and that is we produce about 60% of the nation's seafood, but it's 30% of the overall value. So those two numbers have always, I think, sort of stuck in the throat of a lot of Alaska fishermen. I suppose there are good reasons for that, mostly that it takes quite a bit of expense just to get the seafood from Alaska to where most markets are.
Oh, sure. The shipping, the freezing, the holding, the, you know, the middlemen. It's quite a path. And we are some distance from market. But I think Alaska is in some ways really kind of getting left behind.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.
Well, do you think some of it is that, you know, Alaskans have always been locked into a volume mindset? you think of catching a lot of fish as being the number one thing, and maybe not so much quality. You know, we've always had not as much processing capacity as you'd find in most other places that have less fish. But, you know, usually you see a lot in the past. You saw seafood shipped out of Alaska in its most raw form. And if there was any more processing or value adding to be done, it was done somewhere else, sometimes even China. And so, you know, when we see Alaska seafood shipped to China and then processed and shipped back to the United States, it still says U.S. product of USA on
it. And then we buy it back.
You can't help but think that we're missing out there.
Well, Terry, you've just summed up the one of the definitions of a colony.
Right.
We take, as you said, we take our resources in their raw state, whether it be fish, timber, oil and gas, you name it, ship it out elsewhere where value is added, and then we buy it back. That paradigm has to shift.
Do you think it is starting to shift?
Well, I think there's been huge inroads in creating more value-added items by Alaska processors, for sure. I mean, I can remember, you know, 15 years ago at Bristol Bay, for example, 70-75% of the pack would go into cans. Now it's maybe 30%, you know. So a lot of that's going out, you know, mostly frozen H&G, headed and gutted, but a lot of fillet production. I did a talk the other day with Sea Alaska. They wanted me to share thoughts of 30 years of being on the fish beat. And they said, what struck me the most? And I said, how much it has stayed the same. And this is what I mean about being left behind. I mean, yeah, there's been huge inroads, as I mentioned, in different product forms. And we have Alaska Symphony of Seafood and, you know, the major processors really providing for the, you know, the convenience food, really filling the niche. But what gets me is every other protein industry has what they has a philosophy of what they call from the rooter to the tutor.
Okay, write that one down.
Meaning, you know, the full utilization of the creature. And
right.
Still here in Alaska, I mean, definitely some of the, you know, some of the companies are making inroads in, you know, human-grade fish oils. I think there's one plant in Alaska down in Dutch Harbor that extracts collagen from fish skins and sends mm-hmm. it to the Japanese market for the cosmetic industry. But here we have, you know, 3 billion pounds of waste. The protein, you know, you might fillet a salmon, and what's that, maybe 30-35% product recovery, they call it. What happens to the rest of it? Kodiak, we're fortunate. We have the reduction plant where the processors all, you know, chip in so that the gurry, as we call it in New England, is brought into the plant, and it's turned into fish meal, fertilizer, oils, but most other plants in Alaska, I'd go so far as to say nearly all, are still grinding up the skins, the heads, and dump, you know, out it goes.
Right, then it just goes on a barge and it goes out to where it's legal to dump it and off it goes.
You know, and there, you know, I've just read reports over the years. I mean, just, you know, I think Alaska, the fish heads for the is by far the biggest bulk of waste. And, you know, that could be something like a $700 million industry just taking those frozen fish heads and utilizing them for, my gosh, just selling them to Asian countries, you know.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Another sort of a revolution has been, and especially during this time of COVID, people have been at home, they've been ordering a lot of their food online, and there's been an explosion of people ordering frozen seafood online. There have been a number of companies here in Alaska, most notably, the one over in Homer.
Wild Alaska.
Wild Alaska. They've had tremendous growth. And talking to Aaron Kallenberg, you know, he's very clear that working out the supply chain was essential in that, and that simply working out a supply chain in which your seafood could travel from Alaska to a freezer right outside your town where it would be delivered.
Right.
You know, having
fresh
been
frozen.
Fresh yep. frozen, solid frozen the entire time was a big part of it. And it's something we've never had before.
And I don't see that trend going away. And as I sit in, you know, with the webinars with the Tridents and the OBIs and, you know, Silver Bays, every one of their top people talk about this trend is just continuing to grow. It wasn't a flash in the pan because of COVID, which of course is still here, but just the awareness of, I can cook this at home.
Yeah, and they seem to be having a lot of success with people who might go to the supermarket and you look at the proteins there in the display case and you look at the pork and you think, I don't know where that came from. And it's the same thing with beef and chicken. You know, it's produced in large scale industrial facilities. And with fish, you can say, where did this fish come from? And for some of these new companies, whether it's a big company like Peter Pan or a smaller company, there's a company that's Lennon and Anita Carpenter run just from their boat.
Emerald Isle Seafoods. Right. Yeah.
And they, when their customers are very much into the idea that they can look at their food on their plate and they know exactly where it came from.
Yeah.
And this boat produced sustainably.
Right. More and more consumers are paying attention to that, as you just pointed out. And I think Alaska has, you know, a lot of credit to Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute and to mm-hmm. and to our processors and the fishermen for delivering better quality. That's been mm-hmm. a huge change, you know, and for just getting, I remember when I first started Alaska, you know, it just had a bad reputation for such inconsistent product.
Yes.
And a lot of it was staked, not filleted, and you could only buy them in certain size boxes. And, you know, so here we're so far away from the market, it's more expensive anyway, and it wasn't being delivered to people in the forms they wanted or with the identity they wanted. And they've done a great job turning that around. Copper River was a leader there. Mm-hmm. Bristol Bay, I remember when the Alaska legislature first passed a bill saying that regional groups could form associations, and they would fund it with a portion of a tax on their catches, and they would direct it, whatever they wanted to do. And people thought, oh, that had never happened in Bristol Bay. They can't agree on anything. And that was one of the first ones to sign on as
an
RSDA.
They seem like among the most robust of the regional associations.
You bet. And again, it's that differentiating from farmed salmon. If there's one thing that the huge eruption of farmed salmon did, it made people aware of salmon.
Mm-hmm.
And they were eating more salmon.
Right. People love salmon.
Yeah. And then, you know, people could become a little bit more discriminating by realizing that that our wild salmon is antibiotic free and it's cage free and, you know, this type of thing. And then you get into the story of the individual fishermen and the crystal clear waters. They've really done a good job of telling their story.
Alaska Fish Radio's Lainey Welch. Thanks, Lainey.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.